Coming up on This Week in Computer Hardware, CES is coming, RTX 2600 and Ryzen 3000 leaks, a new VESA standard might mean OLED desktop monitors, Dell goes public, and some fancy keyboards. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 498, recorded on January 3rd, 2019. RTX 2600 and Ryzen 3000 leaks galore, people. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/twitch. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you, well, guess what, kids, hardware news. And it is a great week for hardware news, and we have an exciting change on the show. Alan Malventano has moved onwards, ladies and gentlemen. He has been absorbed into the Borg that is an Intel, but he has not, however, taken everyone at PC Per with him. Joining us right now, the new editor-in-chief of PC Per, Sebastian Peake, ladies and gentlemen, who is also, along with the new EIC of PCPer.com, going to be co-hosting This Week in Computer Hardware with me. Welcome, Sebastian.
Well, thank you. Good to be here. Yes, I am taking over. Yeah, I'm taking over. And I absolutely refuse to leave. And I've also let the entire staff know there will be no more Intel interviews. We have too much to do in 2019.
Now, that doesn't mean, let me point out, Sebastian is not saying he will not be covering Intel or meeting with Intel or doing briefings with Intel. He's just the lead expert of staffers from PC Burger.
Enough already. Come on.
Ken joined Alan at Intel with Ryan now. So I feel that there will be thorough and detailed benchmarking operations going on at Intel. Not that they're talking to me about that stuff. We should talk about what you along with the editor-in-chief, you're actually taking over doing the benchmarking for GPUs and CPUs over at PC Per.
That's right. In fact, you can see the GPU test bench over my shoulder here. But other than catching up with the new, there's a lot going on. Obviously, this is a transition, and I'm changing a little bit of the stuff around and coming up with my own methodologies and coming up with my own vast benchmark database, which is rather time consuming, as it turns out.
I feel your pain, sir. Because nothing says pain, because I'm in the process of redoing how I benchmark networking gear and mesh routers. And boy, nothing says party. Actually, my benchmarks are probably simpler than yours to run and certainly take less time, but it's still, here we go, filling out the spreadsheet. Let's do that run 2 more times. All right, that's consistent. 40 days later, your eyeballs having sunk into your head, your children, in my case, child in your case, going, who are you? Were you? You're my dad, right? Oh, my goodness. We probably should talk about hardware news. Big story. Of course, it's the week before CES, and one of the things that dropped out is a website called Video Cards, Video Card with a Z at the end. Apparently got a hold of an official reviewer's guide and did what many people would like to do when they get a hold of an official reviewer's guide before the actual NDA is up. Basically took a lot of that information, put it on the website, and generated a whole lot of traffic, which means one of two things. Either they're incredibly clever over there and incredibly bored, or that they actually did get a reviewer's guide and don't expect to ever have anyone from NVIDIA ever talking to them anyway and made the information public. But I'm kind of excited about this. You know, we're looking at a fair number of CUDA cores, 1920 CUDA cores compared to the RTX 2070 with 2304, compared to the 1070 Ti with 2432. We're looking at, a pretty nice bit of performance for the price. And I was thinking it's somewhere in the neighborhood of a 1070, 1070 Ti. Are we looking at in terms of the performance?
Yeah, I mean, the rumors about an upcoming card like this have been circulating since, I think, back in August. And a few weeks ago, I had done whatever the current roundup was for rumors at that time. And some things right. have changed. Other things, whatever video cards has gotten their hands on, they think they have a lot more in the way of details. And we've been hearing about something like this since nobody knew about the RTX 2080 and 2070 cards.
Sure.
And those were still being thought of as maybe these would be the GTX 11 series. And then there were some conflicting reports about mobile variants that were in the 11 family, which, you know, I've seen both sides where people throw cold water on it, and it may or may not be like old placeholders on HP's website that were advertising right. these mobile parts in the 11 series. So we'll have to wait and see. It, to me, it's kind of interesting to think about the possibility of an announcement, because, you know, typically CES is not where you see graphics card announcements.
Right.
I had to look it up. Like the last one was back in 2015, and that was the 960. So we'll have to see how much of this is accurate. I would put a lot more stock into what I'm seeing from the same outlet with regard to upcoming AMD processors, but I don't think there's been any like product listings or anything like that for any new GPUs just yet. So
it would be nice. I mean, they're talking about a January 7th announcement date, which would be a little oddly timed given the NVIDIA's keynote on Sunday night. Or am I doing the math wrong on the keynotes? And suddenly I needed a calendar because life got terribly confusing. No,
the 6th.
Yeah, that would be
Sunday the 6th. That's actually the day I'm flying out. So I don't know if I'm actually going to be able to make the keynote or not. It depends on when I arrive. But
they tend to be very long. And most of the really good stuff tends to come towards the end. So they tend to start late if my memories of NVIDIA keynotes hold fast. But yeah, they're talking about, you know, an NDA or release of, you know, Monday, January 7th, which would be the morning after NVIDIA's keynote, launch date of January 15th, pricing of $349. And if you take a look at looking at Newegg, 1070s are selling for $335 right now. And, you know, if you have some of the more, you know, if you're looking for a short version, you're talking about a biscuit under $400. 1060s are still sitting around $250, $270, depending on which configuration you're getting. Some actually down as low as $240. It feels like we have the beginning of the drying up of the 10 series GPUs finally starting to happen, although ask me that question again in 4 weeks if there's still a ton of cards available on the websites. But that would be a compelling price. If 1070 Ti performance plus some limited ray tracing abilities at a $359 price point, that would be nice.
It's definitely nice. I always expect some sort of mid-range offering with every series, of course. And right. But obviously the ray tracing thing brings a new component to the mix. And then as far as pricing goes, you were talking about Newegg. It's only recently that I've been going back and looking into current pricing and availability for not just NVIDIA, but AMD GPUs, and seeing that the Vega 56 and 64 actually like come back down to earth somewhat. Although
yes,
what you were just looking at was a little bit higher than what I had seen. I was looking at Vega 64s at $399. And 56 is closer to like the 329 range, but you know, that sort of $300 to $400 price point is where you get generally like really good 1080p performance at high detail settings. So we'll see where it fits in.
We wait, ladies and gentlemen, with bated breath. If anyone out there is fluent, or reads Russian well, you might want to head over to edeskatalog with a K.ru, because this was making the rounds earlier this week. Basically, AMD Ryzen 9, next generation AMD Ryzen CPUs. They're calling it a 3800X, which we would interpret as this is the first big rumor of the 3000 series. I think 16 core, 32 thread, 3.9 gigahertz. You know, if my Russian, which is nearly non-existent, if my guessing at the specs is correct, maybe a 7-nanometer process. You know, it's probably a 7-nanometer process on that one. You know, this is a website that sells parts, so this could be a mistake, or this could be another really interesting social engineering tool for getting traffic on your website. But I think everybody's expecting there's AMD announcements certainly coming on Wednesday morning at the keynote from AMD. I would not be surprised to have 3000 series parts announced this week.
I mean, at this point, neither would I. A couple of weeks ago, before these latest leaks or rumors or whatever they are came out, I was a little skeptical. But in my experience, when you start seeing the product pages with product listings, it seems to indicate that it's close by. Unless this is just a really well engineered rumor at this point, but. We've been seeing stuff about the Ryzen 3000 series for a little while now, and over the course of the last month, little extra tidbits have been coming out. But the internal discussion here was kind of some of these numbers seem almost insane. So we started to question the validity of the rumor initially, but we're talking about Threadripper level, 16 core 32 thread on the desktop, but right. Not just that, we're talking about parts that one below that. I'm looking here at video cards, and the Ryzen 7 3700X is listed as a 12 core 24 thread part, which can turbo up to 5 gigahertz. And I don't know if that's single core turbo. I would imagine so, but the idea that they could be not only exponentially increasing core and thread counts, but also pushing clocks up to 5 gigahertz. That suggests
credulity.
Yeah, how mature is this 7-nanometer process if it is indeed going to be on 7-nanometer? Are they already able to push 5 gigahertz on 12 cores? Right. It seems very hard to believe, but very exciting. I mean, even these lower end parts are talking about 8 and 16 for the core and thread counts at 65 to 95 watts. So,
yeah. That's,
I mean, already, Intel on the high end with Coffee Lake, the processor that's in the GPU's test bench right now is an 8700K. So that's around $400 in most of the time, I think. And that's 6-core, 12 thread. So unless I've completely lost my mind, but the idea of where AMD has been as far as aggressive pricing with these parts, I am definitely curious. I'm looking forward to this. It'll be a complete surprise to me. I've not been briefed on anything. I haven't seen anything other than these rumors myself. So,
yeah, they're keeping pretty tight-lipped at AMD in terms of NDA briefings, and no sign of anything on the GPU or processor side heading into CES. But that's, of course, what the big events are, to generate a tremendous amount of traffic around that. When are you expecting anything in terms of Intel having CPU announcements at CES? Because for me, it's been frustrating, because it's like, we're doing drones, we're doing this, we're doing that, and desktop, at the end of what's usually like a 90-minute extravaganza of mayhem and really strange demos. Fun. But
yeah, the last briefing, which we reported on, I think, earlier in December, was kind of an introduction to a new generation of desktop and new generation of integrated graphics with 2x the performance, and talking about reaffirming plans for discrete GPUs from Intel in 2020, but nothing right now in that vein. The new desktop, what they were talking about, next generation 10-nanometer in 2019. So I don't know when in 2019, and I would be shocked if some of the stuff they were talking about was available immediately based on just previous roadmaps. But once again, don't have a lot of information about that, and they've been very tight-lipped as well, other than to reaffirm that they are working on the discrete GPU and that there's new stuff coming by the end of this year.
But we're going to blow AMD out of the water on two fronts. We're going to scare the pants off of NVIDIA soon.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry to Robert Herron about HDTVs. Looks like it's going to be a very incremental year. LG announced the new processors. They're putting in their OLED panels. Not really expecting anything revolutionary. Hoping to see OLEDs hit some lower price points. Very, very curious to see what Samsung comes out with. They've been working on quantum dot technology. Sony, of course, has always had a spectacular demo or two last year. Robert was completely blown away by their true full HDR 10,000 nit panel. Interesting thing watching, certainly Sony, who uses LG panels, and LG is looking at some of the extraordinary things that Sony's done with the processing on their LG flat panels. TCL, we would not be surprised. I would not be surprised to see a follow up that TCL is working really, really hard to kind of hold that best deal under $1,000 for a 4K HDR television. Not too much going on there. A lot of the projector companies, Epson, JVC, Sony, Digital Projection, did most of their big announcements, I think, at CEDIA this year back in September. But we could see some announcements from any or all of them heading into CES. Certainly Epson's going to talk about a few things. Sony probably not. BenQ and JVC possibly, although I think JVC's lineup's really filled out in terms of projectors. All the game, all the motherboard manufacturers will be there. All the laptop manufacturers will be there. I think at this point, I know of somewhere in the neighborhood of 27 laptops that will be announced in the opening couple of days of CES.
There's always new laptops.
Yeah.
You can never have enough
laptops. Which I love. Never have enough laptops, but there's moments where, your eye starts twitching. It was like a couple of years ago when motherboard manufacturers decided that they would release, upwards of 30. I think they were averaging 34 motherboard designs for every new chipset spring of 2017. And it becomes a lot to keep track of, but ton of laptops coming out. Not too much on the VR front. Everything seems to be kind of quiet. Nothing really coming from HTC Vive as far as we know. OSSIC, of course, has their big standalone headset coming a little bit later in 2019. And we'll see. Anything else you're thinking about for CES or planning on chasing down?
Well, I'm not sure about the availability of chasing stuff down. I always have this fantasy of just being able to wander the show floor and just kind of look into the stuff that I'm interested in myself. But typically what we cover takes up most of our time, meetings, that sort of thing. But I am a big display panel geek myself, and kind of looking ahead to CES, like you said, incremental. I mean, we have HDMI 2.1. Mm-hmm. And, there's, of course, people will be showing 8K panels, which I've, that's interesting. It's like an interesting tech demo, but there's no content for it. But with one of the interesting things with the new HDMI standard is the bandwidth to go to 120 hertz at 4K.
Right.
So even though there are rumors about and reports about new OLED computer monitors, I would be shocked if not only do we get OLED computer monitors, but we also get them at high refresh rates. I'm sure that's another year or two away, but I would like to see personally native 4K projection come down. The last time I looked, Sony had the least expensive true 4K projector, which was, I think, $6,000, and everyone else is using like pixel shift technology or some sort of enhanced but right. sub 4K projection.
We like to call it FAUXK. Yes. But I don't
have 4K. my projector, I have an Epson 5030UB, which is a native 1080p, and for most of the stuff that we watch on it, it looks fine, because this is like Blu-rays being projected onto a 100-inch screen. But
I will say the 4010 and the 4050, which were the latest 4K projectors at an Epson that Epson announced at CEDIA, looked amazing. I would cheerfully accept one of their projectors, especially when you're talking about you're looking at some pretty bright extremely color accurate performance off some 12-bit processing for $2,000.
I don't think it seems like every time they increase, like every time a new model series comes out, not only do you get more features, and obviously it went from the 5030 to the 5040 with they brought in 4K support, but they also seem to always be able to eke out a little bit more brightness. It went from like 2300 or 2400 and up, and then better contrast ratio, so better blacks at the same time. So
yeah, hopefully let me know where you're going to be Wednesday afternoon.
On a plane. Wait. I have to leave early. I'm only there Sunday through Wednesday.
One thing, Sebastian, you found this morning, I'm very curious to hear more about a new VESA standard ahead of CES, and you're wondering if OLED monitors are going to show up. A lot of activity from VESA this year with HDR certification for desktop monitors, which is a rabbit hole I don't want to go near, but I'm really curious with the idea of OLED desktop monitors.
Yeah. Well, the new standard, the revision to the year-old display HDR standard is this true black, and that's where the OLED connection is, because now we're talking about, what is their minimum here? It's very, very low. Maximum black level of 0.0005 nits. So obviously this is something where emissive displays like OLED, which literally are at zero for a true black. And this coupled with the reports we'd already seen about some perspective, like 22 to 24 inch OLED computer monitors, it seems very suggestive. I mean, it's been a couple of years since I was in a meeting with Lenovo and we got to see their ThinkPad X1 with an OLED display, which at this point I almost think has already been discontinued. But
yeah,
we have seen laptops with OLED screens, and obviously you can adapt an OLED TV as a monitor, but seeing dedicated hardware, hopefully in a more affordable package for computers, is something interesting. Of course, image retention is still an issue. So we'll have to see if there's some sort of display shift or some other technology. I know my LG, I have a B6 series OLED TV, and I have actually played around with that a little bit as a monitor for some holiday benchmarking when I had my system set up upstairs to everyone's delight. But unless you have some sort of dedicated display shift where the default is that the entire display kind of shifts from side to side periodically, and you see it jump a few pixels, that's with the hope of eliminating the image retention, which is a real problem. So we'll have to see.
Nobody wants burn-in on their laptop monitor.
No, I don't need the Windows taskbar etched into my OLED screen in perpetuity.
There you are. HDR, true blacks, extraordinary colors, trying to play a video game with a big stripe across the bottom. With type here to search in the lower left-hand corner. It's just not the way anybody wants to roll. Oh, my goodness. We should take a moment to thank our sponsor, ExpressVPN. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by ExpressVPN, Cafe, Hotel, McCarran Airport in Las Vegas, public Wi-Fi. I use public Wi-Fi, but I only use it if I'm heavily armored and protected. Man, right? You're paying a bill from Starbucks, you're checking your calendar, you're trying to log into a website, or goodness help you, you are a professional working for a company that doesn't automatically force you to use a VPN. It's amazing the stats when you look at the number of people that are out there working for large corporations that run their laptops on vacation or travel in a hotel or an airport without securing their connection. A hacker with the right know-how, they can intercept your data. They're going to go after your passwords, credit card numbers, personal details, try to sneak into the business network. To protect my online activity from spies and hackers, I am using ExpressVPN, our sponsor. Easy-to-use apps that run in the background of your computer, your phone, your tablet. Any connection you want to do, they can protect. Turn it on with a single click. It secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data, hiding your public IP address, keeps your DNS hidden. You can safely surf on public Wi-Fi without being snooped on or worrying about your personal data being stolen. It's rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And the cost for this level of security, so little, less than $7 a month. If you actually do use the Wi-Fi at your local coffee shop, you're probably spending a lot more on coffee every month than you'd be spending on security for your wireless connection. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/twitch. That's expressvpn.com/TWICH for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/twitch to learn more. And we want to thank expressvpn.com for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh, goodness. The speaking of security, or the near total lack thereof, another day, another terrifying subject comes up. Jeremy wrote this up at PC Per. This is awful.
Yes.
It's a rootkit, installs itself in your motherboard's UEFI using, quote, technology adopted from LoJack, which
is nice?
Normally, yeah. So LoJack is a nice tool that allows you to access a stolen computer without the person who currently has it knowing about it, end quote, as I steal Jeremy's line there. This is crazy, right? So LoJack, it's in flash memory, SPI flash memory on the motherboard. It's supposed to just quietly launch at boot. And this is, should we be terrified or merely worried about this one?
I'm not sure yet. This came from a security researcher at ESETS. And right. he's done this big write-up, and I have not gone through it yet. But it's definitely a possibility, and he outlined basically the way that the rootkit could target the UEFI. And this, how long has it been since we first heard about like motherboard viruses, like actual CMOS setup viruses? I remember I've looked at old systems that have that like boot time antivirus that you would enable in like the Pentium era.
This is pretty crazy, because basically they're repurposing legit code, which happens for nefarious purposes, but nobody's really seen anything in terms of UEFI. And this what they haven't talked about is Absolute Software. They're calling it, like in the Threat Post article about it, a weaponized, customized version of Absolute Software's wares. That there was a vulnerable version of it that came out in 2009. So this is a really old piece of software that they've found sort of a contemporary hack for, or recycled it. But they need a phishing email. They need to get you to download and execute a small executable file. And Shannon and I talk about this on Tech Thing a lot. Shannon talks about this on ThreatWire a lot. You just probably shouldn't open any link in any email ever again for the rest of your life, because phishing just gets nastier and nastier with what it can do to your computer.
It almost makes me want to do everything inside of a VM. And one of the things, a different topic, but one of the things that was sort of previewed, I know Mary Jo Foley had written something up about a future build of Windows 10, including virtualization, which instantly creates like a mirror of your current system. And then as soon as you close it, everything's gone. So maybe that's the answer. Although there's certain hardware level links still even in that environment. And I know that it can access at least there's like a handoff for GPU hardware. So I'm not sure there's any chance of any infection that way. But you'd have to think that, like you said, there is a certain amount of user interaction that's required to make something like this actually work.
It was, the Threat Post article also identifies the ESET. They had identified a customer with the malware on their system. And apparently the Pentagon started to upload malware samples to VirusTotal, which included the executable and the DLL file that are trying to install the UV rootkit. And, you know, at the very last line of that article that you probably can't read if you're watching the video right now, I'm going to quote the Threat Post article. I'm going to quote Tom Spring. By enabling secure boot and making sure their UEFI firmware is up to date, end users can protect themselves against attack, Vishan said. So if you've been ignoring secure boot for years, especially if you're maybe running IT for a large organization, it might be time to start thinking about turning on secure boot. And of course, as always, making sure your firmware is up to date, which I'm pretty sure everybody who listens to this podcast has been doing as we struggle with the exciting opportunities for hackers to invade your processor that have come up in the last year or two. Not that I'm bitter, angry, and terrified by that.
And, you know, there's always that fear, too, if you have a system that's working perfectly, like, do I really want to update the firmware? Especially some of these gaming products where you have firmware upgrades on a very regular basis. It's very aggressive how often you get updates that will either add CPU support or correct issues with audio or things like that. So maybe that will be, I can't imagine a world where we have like update Tuesday for your motherboard, but hey, maybe.
I don't think they can write up firmware updates fast enough. I don't think there are enough people capable of writing and vetting the firmware for motherboards to make it happen that fast. But I've been wrong in the past and I will be wrong in the future, I suspect. That we did not cover in our last episode, AMD's announced the availability of Athlon processors with Vega graphics APUs. And I'm wondering, you know, is it possible that one of these processors will replace the Ryzen 3 2200G at the low-end system leaderboard on PCPer? They seem even lower-end than that.
Yeah, they're a bit low-end, but this is interesting to me because partly because of the power targets. These are 35-watt parts.
Ooh.
Where you're into that like laptop category where you have Intel parts, high-end Intel parts anyway, on laptops that can go up to 45 watts. And while these are not high-performance parts, though, these are dual-core, four-thread. You have three of the Vega graphics CUs. All of these announced processors have the same 1 gigahertz graphics core. They're priced sort of with the base frequencies. So you pay $55, although today I was looking at Newegg and the 200GE, which is the base model, which is actually still the only one that's listed for sale, is actually selling for around $59, but it depends on where you go. And then you pay a little bit more for a faster base frequency. And you know, in that price range, you're getting, if you think about putting together a budget system that you're not necessarily going to be using for any kind of hardcore gaming, I mean, $55 for a CPU that gets you four threads, which, you know, theoretically is enough to play modern games and gives you some decent onboard graphics capability right out of the box, that's not a bad deal at all. And we get back into that discussion of like the $400 gaming PC again, if, you know, this takes the place for some people, one of the budget like Pentium or Celeron processors, right, and gives them that flexibility to, you know, add graphics later if they want to, but right out of the box lets them put together a system for, you know, like, you know, add in the price of a motherboard, power supply, like $200. So it's always good to see competition and more budget options. And this is definitely a very budget-friendly way of putting together a system for like a family member or just somebody who wants like a low-power, quiet system. And they target, of course, like 720p gaming with graphics of this caliber. So
it's tempting also, as given the power consumption, that would be really tempting to do for a media server, as long as you weren't doing sort of, you know, 4K transcoding. But if you're doing an audio server or just straight out, you know, sending 1080p video to your to your home theater or something, that would be a really tempting part to use for something like that, given the relatively low power consumption for the number of cores it has.
Yeah, that's an area where I always wanted to see more options with smaller form factors with AMD platforms. You know, we have sub mini ITX for Intel, and then of course thin mini ITX. And that's just something where in the past, like the AM3 socket didn't really get any small form factor love, partly because of power draw issues and that sort of thing. But like 35 watts, you can put this in almost any package. And this is something that you could find in a mini PC. So my thought looking at this story initially was, and I've done quite a few like mini PC reviews over the years, and it's almost every company just has lower power Intel parts. And they definitely have that like sub 10 watt and sometimes even sub 6 watt platform that they can put out, but with some active cooling, even low speed, low noise active cooling, you could definitely put something together with one of these APUs and have some viable graphics performance as well.
Tempting. You, this is fun. I love keyboard reviews. And Christopher Koch wrote this up for PC Per, the Wujing 1 analog keyboard review. And I was kind of curious what an analog keyboard is as you make a pained breath.
No, I'm just saying, like, first of all, I didn't get a chance to use this one yet. But this was a crowdfunded project that... while not 100% fleshed out yet, apparently there's already a second one in the works, but right. It's a very interesting concept to think that you could look at, I believe they're using, like, they're looking at a reflection of the actual...
the FlareTech optical switches.
Yeah, it's like a light source, and they look at the reflection of the light source, and... which allows, one of the things I thought of when I first read this was that it would give you a lot of flexibility over actuation point, since you're just telling the software where to look for actuation, right. Which you can do with the software. The one thing the software really doesn't have support for right now is macros. Like, there are no like built-in macros for key bindings for various games, which I thought was a little odd. But... apparently he liked the keyboard. The issue was with the keycaps themselves, but there is an upgraded option available for those. You're buying into very emerging tech here. And so there is that that early adopter tax. This is a $160 product.
Right.
And it works. It absolutely works. And there is that flexibility of being able to control the actual actuation. Although he did say it's quite shallow, like the actual travel, the feel of it is quite a shallow experience. So if you're into that like deep key travel, like mechanical experience, this is a little bit lighter than that.
Sure.
But and I'm completely missing the point here with the fact that it's analog because... this is a different kind of control for games. Like this is really being marketed as a way to have that fine analog control beyond like a mouse or a gamepad.
I mean, as somebody who is a keyboard nerd, even I find this a little subtle and a little fringe, which is saying something considering I've usually leapt at the chance to grab every new sort of switch that's come out in the last decade, it seems like. But I was really curious, like the whole idea of, you know, sort of a light and a prism and the ability to adjust the range, and people are talking about swapping in on the Atomax keys that are inside of this board. People have actually swapped in like Cherry MX Blue springs change the feel of it. Yeah, I mean that seems like a very intensive project because there's, you know, Dunning says, I have a lot of keys on my keyboard, like disassembling them and replacing the keys inside of them. Or perhaps I am misreading the article on about Atomex that gave the information. But they're talking about how it's so fast, like the debouncing is 0.03 milliseconds, and you know, that you can sort of read a range of key travel on that. It's interesting. You know, it's, you know, did it garnish an award, or is it more of a interesting thing that people should keep an eye on as it evolves?
The latter. This is something where there was interesting aspects to it, and then there were enough kind of questions, like the lack of macros, the fact that even at $160, the keycaps were quite thin and didn't have that kind of premium feel that we're used to seeing from gaming keyboards in the market above $100. So,
right,
you know, it's just, obviously you're paying for the tech, this Prism switch. So I definitely need to try it out myself before I can give it my endorsement.
It's always good to touch it before you judge it. I'm curious. We'll be keeping an eye on that one. Another keyboard article that came out this week over on Tech Report, the RealForce R2, or the 10 keyless keyboard. Man, one, I got to say, I am down with the super chill gray RealForce R2 aesthetic, especially if you've been spending a lot of time on Mass Drop and you like to look at all the shiny keycaps. This is not your keyboard unless you immediately plan on popping these keys off and replacing them. But this is an interesting, this is an interesting experiment for me, because essentially the Topre switches, they're very distinctive, and you know, I'm just gonna, you know, quote Tech Report, they are at their root a fancier form of the rubber dome that underpins so many forgettable $10 keyboards. To be sure, these are the finest rubber domes you'll ever feel. And, you know, they feel a lot different, but essentially this is the fanciest rubber dome keyboard you can put money on.
You know, I've absolutely typed on really, really good rubber dome keyboards. Right. But that's one of those things where if you haven't used one of these RealForce keyboards, which aren't really in the like mainstream distribution channel, Elite Keyboards distributes them here. My last experience was with the RealForce RGB.
Right.
And they do have a different kind of a feel. And it's, he describes it as being somewhat akin to a Cherry MX Brown.
Right.
Which is that linear with just a little bit of tactile feel as the key actuates. But these do have at least some tactile feel, and they're light actuation force.
And apparently it's the actuation weight is variable. You know, so variable weight keys and a little bit softer than a mechanical, or more gentle on your fingers than a mechanical key. You know, this is a $258 keyboard. so.
Oh, is that all? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I want to give a shout out to Jeff Campman for reviewing that, but, boy, that's an expensive, an expensive keyboard. And as he puts it, he doesn't think it's absurd or ridiculous or foolish to ask that much money for this keyboard, but it's something that people will definitely want to try out before they put the money up front.
I mean, it's kind of par for the course for the Topre keyboards. Sure. I mean, the last one I looked at was, I think it had a retail of $249.99 as well, so.
Fancy keys, fancy price. Are you nervous about Dell going public again?
I don't really know what to think about that.
Yeah,
they did not. They used things that I can't even pretend to understand. there was like a VMware buyback and somehow they're back on the public exchange without an IPO. And it was very interesting. I mean, they yes. And then there was questions about, well, why now? Because of market volatility. And if you look at their last quarter, they've actually been doing quite well.
Yeah.
In the like the PC space. So when I looked last night, I think they were at like $47 a share currently. So it's been holding pretty steady since it launched at $46. But I am not a market expert by any stretch. But it's, you know, when Michael Dell took the company private, it was a leveraged deal with a group called Silver Lake, and Microsoft actually put in money as well. And that was a major effort.
It's $24 billion.
Yeah. And here we are almost 6 years later, and suddenly the company is public again with a valuation of something like $16 billion, although that doesn't translate, obviously, completely into the value of the company compared to that buyback 6 years ago. But
I feel like being private has been so good for Dell. There's just been a lot of great products, a lot of great engineering, a lot of sort of long-term thinking rather than what can we do to make Wall Street happy in the next, quarter.
Yeah, it's exactly the next 12 weeks. Curious about it. Yeah, that's like you've been able to be a successful company without having to answer to the shareholders, without having to be on, you can set your own schedule and for product releases and innovation and spend what you want on R&D. So I'm a little curious as to what the actual reasoning is behind the move. I'm sure it'll make interesting reading someday in a book.
Somebody about wanted the history their money of Dell. Back.
Yeah. I'll listen to that audiobook in 20 years and I'll learn everything from the inside.
Oh, my goodness. An extraordinary level of reporting deep inside the history of Dell, including why the buyback the return to public holding. Looking forward to it. Bunch of stuff coming from Dell, the CES, as Dell delivers new products at every CES. But I'm very curious to see how this impacts them long term. Again, because they've done, some fantastic products, and hopefully they will continue to do fantastic products. Again, we wait with bated breath. Normally, this is the part where I'd ask you, is there anything at PC Per you can tell us about that's coming up next week? But it's going to be wall-to-wall CES coverage, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, whatever we have as far as reviews and that sort of thing, we will hold off on because there will be a deluge of news posts going up. And of course, half of us will be at CES. So it's obviously there's so much coming up to report on. But then, we absolutely do have stuff coming up, too, that we're working on. And like I said, I've been going back through the collection of graphics cards and getting data put into the system with like the new test setups and stuff. And if indeed AMD does have new processors at CES, and we'll have some new things to throw on the test bench there and have some new stuff coming, but a lot of the usual suspects as well.
Makes sense. Ladies and gentlemen, Sebastian Peake is our new co-host here at This Week in Computer Hardware. And in case you didn't catch up on it, he's over the editor-in-chief at pcper.com. And if you aren't going to pcper.com, you should. It's a fantastic place to get hardware reviews and news and to see what's going on in the world of hardware, whether it's desktops, laptops, mobile consoles. Just like us here at Twitch, PCPer loves the hardware news, and they do some fantastic reviews, and you owe it to yourself to go over to the website and check them out. My name is Patrick Norton. You can find me over on TechThing, TechThing.com, where I talk about, computer questions and computers and technology and stuff like that with Shannon Morris. And I also host AVXL.com, a home theater and audio podcast with Mr. Robert Herron, who is quasi-enthusiastic about CES. But he's not expecting to see anything that's going to, blow his socks off, blow his eyeballs out the back of his head. We wait. We'll see what happens at CES. But
you make him sound so jaded. Where's the enthusiasm?
Robert is really enthusiastic, but But, you know, he's so deep in the industry, he pretty much knows almost everything that's going to be announced under NDA. Yeah. And, you know, even without that, there's been no huge breakthroughs, unless, you know, somebody comes out of nowhere with something amazing, in which case we'll be talking about it next week here on This Week in Computer Hardware and on AVXL and probably on Tech Thing. We're going to be doing videos pretty much Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at CES. We'll have a big wrap up. You know, up at techthing.com, and we'll be posting videos pretty much every 20 minutes or so. Well, I exaggerate greatly. We're going to be doing 10 or 15 videos from CES up at youtube.com/techthing. So if you want to see what's going on, feel free to stop by and do yourself a favor. Keep an eye on pcper.com because they'll be posting coverage as fast as they can type it, edit it, and make the pictures pretty.
You know, there's really no reason not to set your homepage to pcper.com for all of your CES coverage needs and refresh the page frequently.
Forget about those 400-person teams from CES and The Verge. PCPer, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, forget it. What can they really do that we can't do?
Aromatherapy. You know, the stuff that you don't have the time to look for, they'll find. Because by day 3 or 4, they'll be hurting for stories. I exaggerate slightly, but it's always fun to see what people find in the corners of CES. CES 2019 coming next week. And in case you didn't know it, you've been listening to This Week in Computer Hardware. We call it Twitch. twit.tv/TWICH is the website. If you want to find all the links to download it, the video, the audio, and of course, all of our older episodes, head over to twit.tv/twitch. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening or watching. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Sebastian Peake.
We'll catch you next week on Twitch.